Welcome. It's great to be here with you all. So I have titled my message, Substance Over Style. As Phil said, he generously gave me three whole chapters, 10, 11 and 12. You'll be quite pleased I'm not going to read all of them, otherwise we'd probably not get much else in. But I was just thinking before I start, I've got a question for you. Have you ever looked back in life and thought about how you could have gone in quite different directions because of the influence of one person? You know, if you'd followed that person, you might have gone that way, this person that way. People have an influence on us, especially at certain key stages of life, but throughout our lives. And I think it's quite interesting sometimes when you kind of reflect back. And perhaps you do that more as you kind of move on through life, get older. And so I guess I thought I would just share you a couple of stories, a couple of examples from my sort of teenage years, from in this church, because I grew up in this church, actually. My father became a Christian when I was seven, and we came to this church at that point, and it changed our whole family. But anyway, when in the 1980s, one time RCC had this visiting speaker who was quite a good speaker and he was quite charismatic, and he was appointed quite soon after that as one of the first pastors in this church, actually. And so he and his wife moved here, and they quickly built a following of people who really liked them, who really liked them as a couple. In particular this guy, and he was a bit of an entrepreneur. He bought this plot of land, he had a crop. And from my sort of slightly hazy memories, it seemed that his main business plan was to get the church youth group to work for him for sort of a source of cheap labour. Now, I didn't, because my parents paid better on the apple orchard. But quite a few people did. And it seemed to be okay at first, and his wife was very good to me, actually, for that first couple of years. I remember them. I sort of knew them reasonably well. But what happened is, as time went on, there were a few little undercurrents started to build up around the church. Now, this is like airing the church dirty laundry, really. So a few undercurrents started coming, things that were sort of undermining the church leadership a bit. Wee swirly comments and things going on. And it seemed that there was a group of people following more this man than Christ, if you know what I mean. They were following him. And I think it might have even got to the point where he only came to church when he was preaching, didn't come when other people were preaching. You know, just a few funny things going on there. And so you can kind of see where this is heading, can't you? Over time, they split off, this group of followers, and tried to set up a sort of splinter church separately that didn't thrive. And really sadly, when I look back, some of those people who followed them walked away from faith. They were kind of disenchanted by the whole journey, sadly. Interestingly enough, I Googled this person about 15 years later to see what happened to them. And there was this big serious fraud investigation thing about a person with that exact same name. Not ideal. Anyway, so that's one person. And in contrast, at the age, around the same age, I got introduced to this little old lady. I thought she was ancient. She was probably actually quite old, actually, at the time, probably in her 70s or 80s. She was not much to look at on, well, you know, from an 11-year-old perspective. Anyway, she was about this high. She wasn't much to look at. She had an eye that turned in because it had never been fixed when she was a young person. But she invited me to come and do Bible study with her every week. And you see, I didn't know it at the time. She told me years later, but God gave her this revelation. She was a single woman, had been all her life, and God gave her this revelation that I was to be her spiritual daughter. And as I got to know her, I was like, my goodness, this woman's lived quite a life. She'd sailed off on a steamboat to India in the early 1900s. She was a missionary there as a single woman for decades. She lived through the partition of India and Pakistan. She was there through it all. She had a faith in God that was so gritty. She had lived and breathed her faith. She knew God. She prayed for me. She taught. She was a fantastic Bible teacher. She taught me systematically. She loved God with this absolute passion. But do you know what? In the, all that 10 years she mentored me, 10, 12, 13 years she mentored me till she died, she always turned me to Jesus. That was who she told me to follow, not her, Jesus. And so, you know, when I look back, you know, her name was Marian Logeson, and I look at her and I think, man, that woman had substance. She had lasting impact that's affected me to this day. She had substance. If we look at the image we're using in this series, we've got this sort of jar of clay. You know, there was substance inside that jar of clay. Not much to look on the outside, maybe. Substance on the inside. That other man I talked to you about, he had quite good style. He was good on the surface when you first heard him. But maybe the substance, not so good. The character and the impact on other people long term, not so positive, eh? It's just thought provoking. And so I think that when we look at who we are going to let influence us, we have some choice over that. We have some choice over who we follow in life, and at all stages in life. And I think it's really, really important that we choose people with substance to influence us rather than people who have superficial style but don't have substance. And I think this is the key message in today's passage. So the Apostle Paul is writing to this church. It's in the city of Corinth in Greece, in ancient Greece, about 2,000 years ago. There's an early church. Paul has started the church. And while he was away, these other people, and I'm going to call them the opposition, they have come in and they are sort of undermining Paul and undermining the leadership and disrupting and leading people away from Christ. And some people are following them. And so Paul is writing this letter to the church. And he's got this warning. So I think this is the key idea. His key warning in this passage, in verse 7 of chapter 10, is he says to them, he says, you are only looking on the surface of things. You're looking at these people on the surface. You're not looking at what's underneath. It's a key message. And he spends a couple of chapters here pointing out to this early church the contrast between Paul and his team and what they are like as people with substance compared with this opposition group where we have a superficial veneer. And he says this, he's concerned because this people with the veneer are leading people away from Jesus, away from Christ, away from the truth. And he says this, he says, I'm afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray because they're following these people from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. So that's his concern. Now, I'm just going to say about the full, I encourage you to read the whole three chapters yourself, but I'm going to say it is, and I'm not going to go through it all systematically in absolute detail, otherwise we'd be here all morning doing one message. But if you do read it for yourself, I would say it can be just slightly confusing sometimes. It's a little bit tangential, and Paul probably dictated this. So if you read it and think, oh yeah, this is someone talking, and he sort of says something, and then he adds an aside, and then he compares and contrasts things. And then sometimes it's a little bit confusing because he's actually quoting his opponents and what they're saying. But at first you think, oh, is that what he's saying or is that what someone else is saying? Because he doesn't always make it clear. So it goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. So just, you know, with that proviso, I think it's one of those passages you have to read a few times to get your head around. But what I've done is I'm going to just cover a couple of passages from it. And then I'm going to pull in other verses that sort of fit a few themes that I want to pull out for us to learn today. So that's what we're going to do. So first, 2 Corinthians 10, verses 17 to 18. And if you just listen, I might move around as we do this. You'll see there's an ongoing compare and contrast between Paul and his people with substance and between these opposition people over here. Right, so we're going to read this. So you are judging by appearances, or you're only looking on the surface of things, different translations. It's the verse we've already mentioned. If anyone is confident that they belong to Christ, they should consider again that we belong to Christ just as much as they do. So even if I boast somewhat freely about the authority the Lord gave us for building you up rather than tearing you down, I'll not be ashamed of it. I do not want to seem to be frightening you with my letters. For some say, this is the opposition, his letters are weighty and forceful. But in person, he's unimpressive and his speaking amounts to nothing. Such people, this is Paul again now, should realise that what we are in our letters when we're absent, we will be in our actions when we are present. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. This one's quite funny. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they're not wise. We, however, will not boast beyond proper limits, but will confine our boasting to the sphere of service God Himself has assigned to us, a sphere that also includes you. We are not going too far in our boasting, as would be the case if we had not come to you, for we did get as far as you with the gospel of Christ. Neither do we go beyond our limits by boasting of work done by others. Our hope is that as your faith continues to grow, our sphere of activity among you will greatly expand, so that we can preach the gospel in regions beyond you. For we do not want to boast about work already done in other people's territory. But let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. For it's not the one who commends himself who's approved, but it's the one whom the Lord commends. So that's one of the passages. You see how it goes backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And Paul spends a lot of these three chapters comparing and contrasting himself and his team of people with substance, with this opposition. He calls them in one place super apostles in a sort of tongue-in-cheek parody. These people who have this superficial veneer, but underneath, it's not so good. And so what I'm going to do is just pull out four things where I think there are themes that come through in the three chapters that we can learn from. And there are actually more, but they're the four that I think come up most often and are sort of repeated the most. And so I'm going to talk about these. Comparing people of substance compared with people, what I'm calling people of style, superficial. Okay. So, first point. God gives authority, and when he does this, the impact of this is to build others up and to lead them towards Christ. So this is for the person of substance who's grounded in God. God gives them authority. Chapter 10, verse 8, it says, I boast somewhat freely about the authority the Lord gave us in building you up rather than pulling you down. And then verse 13, it talks about the sphere of service God himself has assigned to us, a sphere that also includes you. So what Paul is doing here, he's making it really clear that his authority comes from God, and he's like on assignment to look after these people. God has given him this job. He's on assignment, he's looking after these people, he's got to bring them towards Christ. And he uses this to build them up, a positive influence. He wants to lead them to Christ. He says, I promised you to Christ in chapter 11. He says, I'm afraid your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. Sorry, I forgot to put them up. In chapter 11 as well. And so this is the whole thing. God's authority, positive, building people up and leading them to Christ. As opposed to the opposition, whom he describes in chapter 11 as servants of Satan, not of God. their actions to pull people down, to warp the truth. And he warns them of these people that when someone comes up to you and preaches a Jesus other than the Jesus we preached, or you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or a different gospel from the one you accepted. And this is all in chapter 11. So what he's saying is these people, they warp the truth. And their authority is not of God. And so they pull people away from Christ. So you can learn quite a lot about character from watching the impact of people on other people, can't you? You look at them and say, well, what happens when people spend time with that person? Which direction do they go? What impact do they have? Are they built up? Do they go towards Christ? You know, do they grow in character? What's the impact? Depending on which person people spend time with. You know, if I go back to the beginning when I introduced this talk, you know, the impact of time with Marian Logerson was immensely positive for me. Pointed me to Christ, built foundations of my life, substance. So it's number one. Number two, I've called this authentic consistency rather than an emphasis on appearance or the superficial. So the opposition here, they were criticizing and undermining Paul. Now, in my experience, I've had a bit of leadership experience, this is a really typical tactic of people who like to play power games. They like to undermine the person who's the leader. Criticism, snide comments, stuff on the background, they pick people off and they work this way. So what they're saying about Paul, they're going, oh, as a person, he's unimpressive. His speaking amounts to nothing. So they're criticizing actually what's probably on more on the superficial side. Obviously communication's important, so decent communication does matter, but they're criticizing his form of communication. Was what Paul is saying. Paul is saying what we are in our letters, in your letters, when we're absent. Here we go. We will be in our actions when we are present. So what's he talking about there? He's talking about consistency, isn't he, of character. He's saying, actually, I'm the same person, whether I'm writing to you, whether I'm talking to you, whatever situation, and I'm the same. Character's the same. It's not changing. It's not situational. He also then says this other comment. He says, I may not be a trained speaker. Now, that's quite significant in the times because in the Greek culture, there was this whole sort of subculture of speakers who were like entertainers. It was a highly developed sort of art form. They spent days practicing these elaborate speeches. So this is probably the context of all this stuff about speaking style. They're saying, well, Paul, you're not one of those. You know, so what right have you got to be talking kind of thing? Because you're not one of these highly elaborate speakers like some of these people might have been. But he's saying, I may not be a trained speaker, but I do have knowledge. And if you think about it, what's more useful? Knowledge or a fancy speech? He's saying, I've got knowledge. I'm a person of substance. I've got knowledge of the truth. I'm consistent, I'm the same no matter the situation. Features of a person with substance, as compared and contrasted with these other people. They have the entertainment value, but they might be different in different situations. And so this all links back to the initial verse about the veneer, and not just making decisions based on the superficial. Got to look at the substance of a person. So that's number two. Number three, I've called this one humility rather than boasting. And I think this is a really big one in this section of scripture. Paul mentions it again and again and again through these three chapters. So I've picked out a few verses. Paul says this. He says, I will not boast about myself except in my weakness. He says, I refrain so that nobody will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or I say. He says, I don't boast of work done by others. And he confines his boasting to the field God has assigned to him. In contrast, what he says about the opposition, he says that they're clearly boasting, puffing themselves up. He says many are boasting the way the world does. He implies that they boast, even trying to take credit for other people's work. They boast of work done by others. And they commend themselves, as that bit I read out at the beginning. You know, when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they're not wise. So they're talking themselves up all the time. Have you ever met anyone who does that? There are people, aren't you, within about 5 or 10 minutes of meeting them, they're busy telling you in as many ways as they can about how wonderful they are. How wonderful they are. Paul gives the opposite advice. He says, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord, i.e. celebrate what God's doing. Talk about that. Don't put all the attention on you or on me. Let it be about God. And he says, it's not the one who commends himself who's approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. So Paul, he's actually coming from a position of humility. He's not talking himself up. He's got a healthy awareness of his weakness. And these things are key hallmarks of people of substance. They actually don't need to keep telling you again and again just how wonderful they are. They don't need to tell you. It's a bit countercultural, isn't it, in our society? Fourth point, of course, it's motivated by love, and it's sacrificial, and it's non-exploitive love. So what have we got here? Paul is going out of his way to say to them, I preach the gospel to you free of charge. So I'm not asking you for money for me to preach to you. That's what Paul, I'm not either, by the way, just in case you're wondering. So he's saying this, he's saying, I preached it to you free of charge. Now, that's important because probably the other people were. He's saying, I'm not a burden to anyone. What I want is not your possessions, but you. So he's not on a big fundraising drive trying to get their money. He's wanting their hearts. He says, I will gladly spend myself for you. This is the sacrificial element coming out. I will gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. You know, actually, serving people's actually costly for us as people. It costs us. It's not a bad thing. It's good for us. But it costs. He's saying it costs. It costs me. That's what Paul's saying. But I spend myself gladly for you. He says everything we do is for your strengthening. It's about you. It's about building you up, helping you. It's motivated by love. He says that again and again. And then there's a big section at the end of chapter 11 where he demonstrates his selfless sacrifice and hardship. And he lists, some of you will have read it before, but he goes through and he lists how many times he's been flogged and jailed and stoned and imprisoned and shipwrecked and all these terrible things that have happened to him whilst he's trying to serve people and serve God's kingdom and teach people about God. So that's Paul's approach. He's aiming to help them flourish, and he's motivated by love, and he's not in it for himself or what he can get out of it. In contrast, of course, the opposition. This sort of implied criticism that they have criticized Paul because he's not taking money, which seems a bit weird, doesn't it? But probably the subtext there is probably because they were requesting money and taking money from the Corinthians. And there's some cultural stuff there too, which I won't go into. But they probably were taking money, and so therefore they were criticizing him because he wasn't taking money. Paul also says about the opposition that he talks about them as people who enslave you or exploit you, or take advantage of you, or push himself forward. Do we know people like that? There's some people who are really nice on the surface, but then you realize it's all about, can they sell you something? Can they use something of yours? Can they, it's that slightly exploitive undertone. He calls them false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. So a masquerade is, you know, when you put this mask over your face and you look like someone you aren't. That's what he's saying these people are like. They put on this masquerade. They look like they're spiritual. They look like they're saying the right thing. They look like they're doing the right thing. But look at what they're doing. They're actually manipulating. They're actually exploiting. They're actually in it for what they can get out of you. So the contrast here is someone of substance is motivated by love. They are self-sacrificial. It costs them to serve you. It costs them. They're not trying to get financial gain from other people. But the opposition, they look good on the surface. They might charm you to start with, but they're manipulative, self-interested, and taking advantage of people underneath. Quite stark contrasts. So the big warning from this passage is don't judge by the superficial veneer. Don't judge by the appearance. Look for substance over style, those four things, God-given authority, where the impact is to build others up and to lead them towards Christ. Authentic consistency rather than emphasis on the veneer. Humility rather than boasting. Motivated by love, sacrificial, non-exploitive love. So, I think we've got a couple of challenges here for us today. Number one, and the most obvious one, is who do we let to influence us? Who do we follow? Do we get sucked in by the veneer? You know, if I look back in life, I am so glad I made the most of the learning opportunity I had to just spend time with Marian Logerson as an influence in my life for 10 years. Now, if I'd invested that same amount of time and energy in following the other person long term, I don't know where I would have ended up. Might not have been quite so good. And we need to be wise about this, I think, especially. I mean, it's obviously been an issue for all time, but we need to be especially wise about it in this day and age because we are all exposed constantly, constantly, constantly to images on social media. And if you think about it, the vast, I would say 90% of those are all about the veneer. They're about the image, they're about superficial, and those things are influencing us all the time. But we can't live our lives online. Some people try. It doesn't go well. We need to live our lives as real people, grounded in the real world, interacting with real people. And when we do that, we need to build our discernment to see and follow and learn from people with substance, not the superficial veneer people. But my second challenge today, this one hits a bit harder actually, I reckon. What type of person am I? What type of person are you? Where do you put your emphasis as a person? Are you all about appearance and being seen to do the right thing, but underneath trying to scheme about what you can get out of other people, how you can make everyone think you're wonderful, that sort of thing? Because if we're craving people thinking we're wonderful, we're heading down this veneer kind of pathway. Or am I someone who's focused on developing that real substance, taking my authority from God, focused on what I can offer other people, focused on humility, focused on consistency, all those things? Do I want to see other people around me flourishing and led towards Christ? Because they are hallmarks of the person of substance. And you know, being honest, we all need to work on this. We all can fluctuate between the two. It's confronting. Worship team can come up if you like. Just in closing, there's one last section I'm going to mention in this passage. And this really kind of follows on, because what Paul is saying here is that people of substance realize that their strength is not all just from them. It's not all being done in their strength. Their strength comes from God. And in chapter 12, Paul goes to a lot of effort to talk about his weaknesses. He talks about his struggles. And then he has this revelation from God that God's power comes through even in our weakness, especially in our weakness. Then we can see God's strength at play, God's power at play, if we know God personally. So we need to do that. And there's a real call for us to learn to be dependent on God's power in our lives. So I'm going to read this verse. But he said to me, this is God speaking, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly. This is now, it's Paul speaking. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. And that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. And Paul has been through a lot of them. Because this is his final statement. He says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And what I want to say to you is, if you feel a bit overwhelmed with life, it can be a bit overwhelming sometimes. I've been there, I know the feeling, many, many, many times. Sometimes you feel like you don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Sometimes you feel like you don't want to go to work in the morning. Sometimes there's things we feel inadequate to deal with. You know, when I've been in that state, you know what I say? God, I can't do it. I need your help. I need your power, your strength in my weakness. And you know what? God carries us through. It's well worth doing that. So just as we close, I'm going to pray in a moment. And also, though, I just want to highlight that we do have our prayer team available at the end of the service after we close. And we'll have people, if you've got something you just think, I really need God's strength. I need really God, need God's discernment. I need to change from being focused on the superficial to being substance. I just encourage you, come forward and get someone to pray for you. I'm going to challenge you and leave you with this thought. We are imperfect. We have weaknesses, and yet God uses us anyway. He can strengthen us. He can give us power, even when and especially when we feel we can't manage in our own strength. So I'll just pray. Lord, thank you so much. Thank you that you are a God who comes through. You give us strength in our weakness. Lord, you are in the process of transforming us into people of substance, away from being people who have a superficial veneer. Lord, give us discernment to follow the right people, to let the right people influence us. Let us become people of substance who lean on you for our strength. In Jesus' name.